We knew no bounds, the land, the speed of sound, riding against our lands, but soon against ourselves. You haunted every memory with no goodbye sound. Bad for me, your pride put out the fire in our flames. Then just one look is all it takes. I feel your eyes, they're locked on every part of me. And then my dumb heart says, just look out.
Anyway, stop moving.
What are you guys talking about?
So we're having like the warmest, what do you guys talk about, I've ever experienced, because my house is still, guys, without heat and water, and I've been moaning to everyone about it, so I apologize. But hey, welcome to the show. We're going to be doing a great film today, a film that we weren't going to do this one, and then I called Eddie and said, we're doing it. Like, we have to do this film. And then I actually watched another film by the guy that can speak droves about, so I was like, well, we'll throw that in. It's an added bonus for anyone that cares. Mm. But we're going to be talking about Don't Look Up, which is a Netflix, you know, original. We've actually done quite a bit of research on this one, so we can talk about a little bit of the different parts of it. But it's by Adam McKay, great director, and we're going to talk a little bit about who this film's for and who it's not for in just a second. But before we get too far, please remember, you're listening to us on SoundCloud, but you can listen to us through any podcasting platform you can really think of. I don't, as I said, I think Anchor FM is the only one I haven't really signed us up for, just because I haven't dropped the RSS stream into there. But check out any podcast provider, and you'll be able to find us and listen to us every week. This show, just in case you didn't know, is just two indie filmmakers. So Ed and I, we make films for Love, Victoria Productions. We are Love, Victoria Productions, you know, quintessentially. And when we talk about some of the stuff we're watching, what's influencing us at the time. And it basically goes from there. Sometimes I get a bit preachy, and I'll start telling you top tips of things. That's only me trying to pass on. I've been doing this for, what, 5 years now, and Ed's been doing it for, like, 20. So we just try to pass on, you know, the little things we know as indie guys that you know, work for us and have helped us over the years with our career. So hopefully that's some help to you. We just get excited about this stuff. So talking about it helps us turn it into further things. And we do talk about that a little bit on this show. There's not much to report because we're out of Christmas. So Ed and I are still working on the game store. He has 3/4 of a script because I couldn't finish it. And I sent it over to him before Christmas hit. I've also got a couple other shows. But basically this, hopefully in the next 6 months, we're trying to get LVP behind some TV shows and some streaming. And I'm not even talking about Netflix. Like, I've pitched it to a few people that we're just going to do it, you know, DIY, do it your own independent streaming and see how that works. But, you know, we're at very early stages of development. This is because obviously the feature we're working on has been pushed back to 2023. And so because we've got all that extra time, Ed and I just didn't want to sit and kind of pre-dev the hell out of that feature. We're going to do some other steps we can get behind the camera, you know, hopefully by the springtime. I'd like it before then if possible. But, you know, I said, oh, we'd be definitely in January. And this is the first thing to learn is just how long things take to set up and get done. And if you want to do them properly, that's the only thing. We could always rush job it. But then, unfortunately, you've got an independent something that's not necessarily the greatest quality. So that's what's going on right now at LVP Studios. If you want to see kind of what we've done before, kind of get more and more about us, the easiest ways to get a hold of us are the website, which is www.lovevictoriaproductions.com. Really, that is the be-all and end-all for us. Everything about us and everything we do is somewhere on that way, on that page, and there's tons. And I, you know, I don't think it's particularly hard to navigate. I just think there's a lot there. So you may spend an entire week, you know, just looking at all the podcasts we've got popped up. The other thing I always warn people, because it is on, you know, the business strategy for the year, to get something more streamlined, that won't be up forever. So I've said it before, I said about 6 months ago for the first time, but, you know, I don't know if we're going to put it behind a paywall. We're just going to take it down because it takes up a lot of space. But, you know, there's going to be a newer website coming that will be just the basics. It'll be, you know, the current episode of this, the current Dirty 20 episode, maybe one or two of our shorts and a catalog of things. But for now, we've got it all up and you can check it all out. So please, by all means, go to the website. If you don't want to do websites, so you can contact us on Facebook. We have both have personal pages for Jason Chereau and Edward Burgos. Or you can go to Love Victoria Productions. I have a company page for that. LinkedIn, there's a company page. Instagram, we are Jazzy J Chereau and Enano LVP, and Twitter, we are @MouthLoveVictoria and @Ananoski Prod. And so those are the variety of different ways to get over. I'm pretty active on Twitter these days with whatever I'm doing. So if I do tweet about something that interests you, feel free to tweet back. There's been a lot of cool things going on, and I find it a good way to reach out to other people I know that might be interesting. And I do love, like, I pick up on, I sometimes, this is how I know Adam and McLeod, you know what I mean? Because I don't, Adam Stovall obviously was on the show. And he had a film that premiered, you know, to big accolades, but right after our short film that we put out. And McLeod's his buddy, and also from the same, we're all from the same general part of America, the Midwest, McLeod, myself, and Adam. But I've never really met McLeod at all. And Adam, I've only met a couple times, but man, we chat away sometimes on Twitter. And I was just thinking this because McLeod had posted something about trying to finish a script, which I'm trying to do right now. But I got a guitar for Christmas.
Yeah.
And so he was like, oh, I hate when you're trying to get this stuff and something distracts you. I'm like, dude, I got a guitar for Christmas and I'm trying to finish up this TV script. I'm like a damned cat with a laser pointer because it just, I couldn't sit down and focus. I was actually a half hour later than I was supposed to be coming to see you because right before Catherine left the house, I was like, oh, let me show you the guitar. She left after like 2 minutes and I was just sat there still playing. And then like an hour later, I was like, oh man, I better get moving to Ed's.
So we saw in the new year together. And very soon after midnight, I was off to bed. And I was lying there. And I just hear you play your guitar.
Really? Oh, I'm so sorry. That's going to kill Catherine if she can hear it that well. But I can't help it. I just, you know, the problem is, like, and I hadn't played it in 2 days, and so I was even more wanting to play it. Like, it's just, that's what makes some people love music and some people don't. For me, like, I know it used to be when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, I was desperate to play it well. Like, I could give a shit if I play it well or not. I just like to play. You know, I just like to make noise. And so, and Ed had to sit through this. Ed was, actually, you watched It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia while I jammed away on New Year's Eve. So this guy, since I got no heat, you know, I told my wife to stay up with her family and not come down. And my daughter ended up spending some time with her cousins. But Ed was like, I'm coming over. And I'm like, oh,
I'm
man,
not leaving you alone.
It's freezing in here, mate. And he's like, no, I'm coming. And man, we were two old men trying to stay up. Because don't get me wrong, we were out in the night having a big party. Like, I don't have any problem staying up for New Year's. But when it is freezing in your house and like, you've got your best friend next to you and you're just we just generally had to, like old people.
What did we drink at midnight?
We had a J2O.
With tequila.
With tequila in it. Because it's like all I had in my fridge at the time. And I was like, fuck it, we got to drink something.
I swear, it'll be one that we talk about for many years.
It will. Oh man, yeah. Oh yeah. So, that's all the ways to get a hold of us. That's who we are. First impressions on Don't Look Up. Who is this film for? Who is it not for?
Okay. Well, let me answer the first impression element first, because when I first saw it, I wasn't sure if I liked it a lot. I liked it, but I did feel like it was preaching to the choir. That was like my initial reaction. Now I feel that it's actually a really important film, and I appreciate it more now, having done a tiny little bit of research into it.
Okay.
But I think it's great satire. If you like satirical comedy, I think that this is really, really quite good. Quite up there. Someone said that it was like Kubrickian in terms of Dr. Strangelove. You know,
we say that because maybe that was one of the better satires. You know what I mean? Because I think of more recent ones like The Dictator.
Right.
What was the North Korean one that was really funny with?
The Interview.
Yeah, The Interview, and then there's also been all the Borat stuff. You know, and it's that kind of satire. It's not quite that wacky though. That's what I liked about it. It's not presented in that fashion.
Definitely not. It's a very well constructed film. But I think what I got from it a little bit was people wake up kind of thing. And I wonder, in terms of who it's for, who it's not for, I wonder if someone who is perhaps a more conservative person, who has more kind of, you know...
Listen, I could see this going a couple of different ways with people who don't like it. And in fact, I mentioned to Ed that like I like the film, but I can totally see groups of people I know that won't. Anyone who hates Hillary Rodham Clinton will hate this film.
Yeah.
And that's because this is the same kind of stuff that people didn't like about her, really. And I do say about her, because it wasn't a personal thing. It was just about the way the Clinton family was kind of ingrained into American politics and the way they did business. And that's the easiest way to say it. Now, listen, I listened to the table you sent me, at least half of it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have the full, I was listening with my car. And, you know, everybody on that table, so you got Leo DiCaprio, Meryl Streep, Jennifer Lawrence, Adam McKay, Jonah Hill, Tyler Perry. Collectively in that room, you have probably upwards of 20, maybe 25 billion in net worth.
Right, right.
It's and they're trying to preach to me
right.
about we got to save the world.
Right, right. Yeah.
That's... Now, sorry, last time someone did, I think it was either, I got this wrong last time, it was either Gal Gadot or the other one. And I'm sorry I confused the two. You're both beautiful. That's why I do that, okay? But when she did her all, imagine all the people. That's how this came across in right. that table reading. Because it was like, no, everybody... fucking knows how bad things are. We get it. I liked it better when Adam spoke on his own and talked about his intentions, and we'll talk about that more after first impressions. But if you are one of those people that is going to grate over the fact that this is being made by people who could also be helping as well, and instead of making a movie, they could have done something much more fortunate for everyone, don't watch this. You know what I mean? You're just going to yell at the TV. And there's no point. Like, they know that, okay? They're not, from the interviews and from the research we've done, like... that's not their intention, is to piss you off. It's they do think this is something important, and they can only be who they are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
and I think that the very interesting thing is that it is a comedy. And so I think films can have like a big impact. We talked a lot about when we discussed Bowling for Columbine. And I think that In a strange way, I think a comedy is the right kind of medium for this. And I am glad it's not as wacky as like Step Brothers.
Yeah, no, it's the kind of thing I would say, like, I really do think everybody should watch this film. Whether you like it or not, you should just watch it to see where you fall on it.
Yeah.
Are you that 50% of this show that does the Don't Look Up? Like, you know, you just have to, it'll help you kind of figure out where you fall in all of this. And I don't think it's going to harm you. And it's on Netflix. The other thing is, like, this is an easy one, guys, because you're not going to have to pay. There's no cinema it's in.
Yeah.
You're just going to go to Netflix, turn it on, and boom, there you go.
Yeah.
So.
And it's a good watch, I would say. You know, it's a good 2 hours spent.
So that's first impressions. You know, I do think everyone should go watch this. But, you know, if you were not a big fan of Hillary Rodham Clinton, if you fly a big red flag and spoke conservative stuff and think that liberals are the craziest people on the planet, then this may not, you know, be in your story wheel. You know what I mean? But even then, it doesn't really shit on those types of people. It just tries to show the differences in thought process in a funny way.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. The comedy is what makes it interesting. So, yeah, everybody, go watch it. Why not?
Yes.
And that's me saying that about a Netflix show, guys. Just have that in there. You're going to be even more impressed when we start talking about what we watched this week. But yeah, that's me saying that about a Netflix show, guys. Like,
no,
go. Everybody should go watch
it. I'm with you. It's a highlight of Netflix for me.
And it's originally, like, go back to last week's podcast, because I always do. Go back to last week's podcast, and Ed, you were like, you're going to hate this film.
I did. I thought, you're either going to really like it or really hate it.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. Like, this was put in front of me that you're probably not going to like it. And I was like, and I probably, you know, having read the Variety reviews ahead of time, I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to like it. I liked it. I really liked it. I thought it was good. So what have you been watching this week, man?
Well, I finally had some days off. So I actually watched some stuff, which was nice. I finished Only Murders in the Building.
Ooh.
Nice. Wonderful. You have to watch, especially
because
we're podcasters.
Don't ruin it for me, but is it a limited series? Like, is it just a one season and one and done?
No.
Okay.
No. Okay. But it's a very satisfying arc for the season, I would say.
All right.
And again, as a podcaster, you'll love, it's one of the reasons why I love the podcast in Ghostbusters. Just the little references and stuff like
really
that.
Yeah. Tried,
exactly. And this has moments like that.
Okay.
But that got me on a kind of crime documentary binge. So finished.
If you don't know Only Murders in the Building, by the way, Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez. Gomez, an absolutely wonderful trio in New York. So it's a very New York.
Very New York.
Yeah.
Very funny, and you know, I'm a true crime person.
It just feels very classic, you know?
Yeah.
All right, sorry about that.
That's all right.
You're watching your true crime stuff.
Yeah, and that led me to finish off the Cecil Hotel. I had only like 1.5 episodes left to go.
Was that a series?
Yeah, it was. It was like four episodes.
You know, COVID, I think it just blitzed it, right? Yeah. Because I was telling him, like, wasn't that funny how the whole thing changes around, though, and all of a sudden it's... I won't ruin it for you guys, but it was like... It definitely started out so scary that by the end of it, I was like, that's fucking hard.
it definitely builds a lot of tension, and then, you know...
Like a limp dick.
But it's a good documentary. I like it.
No, it was
cool. And I also watched The Raincoat Killer, which was about a serial killer in the early 2000s.
Okay, so is this about the guy from Memories of Murder? It's a completely different killer.
It's a different guy. The one from Memories of Murder is supposed to be considered the first one in South Korea, which was like in the early 80s, I think. This guy is like the most prolific.
Okay.
Because he killed, like, they think hundreds of people.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and we were there when his trial was going on, when he got the death sentence and all that kind of stuff. Pretty nuts.
Crazy.
Yeah, really good. 3-part documentary. It's subtitled. It's in Korean. And maybe the reason why you and I would enjoy it more than just an average viewer is because we've been to some of those places, you know.
Does it take place in Daegu?
No, in Seoul. Oh,
okay.
But, you know, like, you just familiar stuff, like familiar streets.
It's just a difference. It would be like, this is where I used to sleep, and Seoul would be like, this is where I puked that one time. Like, I only went to Seoul to party, yeah, so. Yeah.
I also caught up with The Witcher.
The Witcher.
Which I very much enjoyed, but I think if I had watched the whole first season, I'd have... and then had to wait for the second season, I'd have been quite pissed.
Yeah, as far as I understand it with The Witcher, it has an incredibly late start on the plot arc, and so you are dying for them to get moving with things.
The first season feels like a prequel, something that could have been done in like 2 episodes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But the second season gets really quite good. And I like what they're doing.
There's a great bard song. You sang it to me, and I was like, oh, would you sing that to me more? What was it again?
Toss a coin to your witcher.
That's right. Yeah. Toss a coin to... I'll learn how to play that.
You should, man. It's great.
Oh, my God. That's the thing. The problem is I'm with D&D boy over here. So where I was normally like rock star, that's what my daughter keeps saying. Like, Dad, you're such a rock star. Because as I said, here's the funny thing. Like, and I don't know whether it's just me, it's probably everybody. It's like riding a bike, right? Like, so I learned a ton of music when I was younger, and then have not really touched a guitar in probably 10 to 15 years. But that stuff never leaves your fingers. It just gets slower.
Mm.
So I just practice, and it's all coming back. Nice. And so my daughter thinks I'm like a proper rock star. I'm like, no, this is just all the learning I did back in the day. But every time I hang out with Ed, I'm like, you're the bard, you know? Like,
yeah, 100%. You are the bard. And then I caught a couple of The Rock movies, Dwayne Johnson movies, in Central Intelligence.
Okay.
The one he did with Kevin Hart. And Red Notice, the one he did with the guy you don't like, Deadpool.
Yeah,
Ryan Reynolds. Yeah.
I was completely happy with all that because those are the most throwaway. I mean, I say that with Fast and the Furious, but Fast and the Furious have made more money than these shit action films he's in.
And
no one's... I mean, you know, the problem I had with Red Notice was they Netflix went on record saying, like, everybody's watched this. Mm. And it is the most watched. And it was utter bullshit. And everyone knew it. Yeah. And that's the problem I have when I talk about, like, you know, it's the Great and Wonderful Oz. Like, you can't run a business that way. Behind where all of a sudden you just say something, everyone knows it's wrong, and you pretend like, no, we're right. Like, no, nobody was watching Red Notice. You know what I mean? Like, that's why it bombed. And it's okay. Like, it happens that you spent, you know, a couple hundred million to make a movie that, you know, people are slowly starting to enjoy now.
Mm.
But, you know...
Very disposable. Very disposable.
And I don't know. Maybe that is part of their business model, though. Because this week for me, like, I had Don't Look Up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had Tick, Tick, Boom.
Yes.
And Tick, Tick, Boom, I mean, I'll let you watch it and see if you want to do a podcast on it, because it's that good. It's about the guy who wrote Rent, and it is tragic. I will spoil a little bit for you that the tragedy does not enter into the show, which is great.
Mm.
This is about before all this happens, but this was the guy who wrote, you know, a play that changed Broadway, as it were, and then died, like, right before it, on the day it premiered.
No.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. And I mean, but if you love theater, if you love New York, if you love theater and New York, like, you have to watch this
and
film.
It's a musical, right?
It's a musical. Right. Yeah. That's
and
the
it's
weirdest...
got Andrew Garfield, which
Andrew
I love.
Garfield, and there were a couple other really good people in it, but he was the most notable.
Mm.
It's just really well done. Mm. And if you don't like musicals, avoid it like the plague, because it's very singy.
But I'm annoyed because I love musicals, and it was completely buried. I literally had to like search for
the title. And this was Lin-Manuel Miranda did this one. That was the other point that made me want to watch. But yeah, it's one of the other qualms I have with Netflix is like, luckily what I tend to do, and maybe this will be something I'll just do for everybody like at some point, is like I go to other lists. Like I never use Netflix to tell me what to watch.
I go on
Netflix with an idea of I'm going to watch this.
Gotcha.
And so Tick, Tick, Boom had been on like 15 movies you need to see. So was Don't Look Up. And it was like you need to watch this Oscar bait before Oscar season if you want to know what's going on. And I do. So, but man, it just, it's uplifting. You know, it's just, it's one of those things that make you feel good about life if you watch that movie, despite the fact that this guy has a very tragic ending at the very end of it. And I think for you, Ed, and for all the other indie filmmakers out there, especially if you're like an indie playwright, wow, will this speak to you.
Yeah.
Like, this will totally speak to
the
you.
The trailer in and of itself, I was like, oh yeah, this is in my wheelhouse.
Well, part of it's that he has to write this song and he can't think of it. Like, I go through that on a daily basis. Like, I took it for granted before. Last year, if you listen to the podcast, you'll hear me being really cocky about all the writing. And that's because I wasn't doing as much of it. Like, I would come up with shorts, which are not nearly as difficult as it sounds. That's where I would definitely start, because I was always able to make a 6-pager or a 10-pager. But when I've got to make like a 90-pager, it's hard. Like, because I've never done it before. And so, but, you know, the good news I can tell you guys is you just keep trying. You know what I mean? I laugh at a lot of people who either want to judge and say, like, well, he's good and he's not good. I do that. So, but I laugh at people who think that either you're going to stop at this or that somehow you're not going to get where you want to go. Like, you just got to keep pushing and keep working it again, and it gets better every time. But that's the thing, is the iteration. I think that's where people fall down, is they think, I haven't created something genius. I was reading Creativity Inc., which I have to make. I was going to tell you honestly when you came over for New Year's, but I'm going to tell you honestly now. I just opened that book one day, and I've been reading it, but I opened it to that quote that day, and I lied to you on Instagram, and I took the picture of it and sent it over because I knew you'd see it, and I wanted you to think I'd finished the book. I'm only halfway through it. Which is totally me. Ned knows that about me, so he'll be like, yeah, whatever. That's totally Jason. Like, but I just love the quote, and I was so touched by what you said that I was like, I want to tell him now. Like, I don't want to wait another 6 weeks for me to finish this book. Like, I want to tell him today. But one of the things that's talked about in that book, and this is Creativity Inc., right?
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's by the guy who runs Pixar. And usually I would tell you to avoid CEO books, because I've read plenty in my day job and they're shit. Like, they're full of catchphrases and things that won't actually help you. His whole point of the book is to get around that, because he said Pixar never survived because we had catchphrases. We had actual things that we had to try to implement. And one of the things he talked about was stories, the ugly baby. Anytime you write something the first time, the first story that comes out, it's an ugly baby. If you don't believe me, go to that book and read about the 7, 8, 9, 13 iterations of Up, which is a completely different movie than the original concept.
Yeah.
But this is what they talk about. And they say, the point is you get it out, then you get some feedback, and then you go back and do it again, and you have to see improvement. Where you have problems is if you're doing that and you're not seeing improvement. Then you know you've got a dead duck and it's not a good idea. But I, you know, when I read that and then I thought about all the different things that come over our desk, not even just our project, but other people's projects, I was like, you could probably get 75% of those then off into somewhere. It's rare that you're going to have a dead duck. It's rare that you're going to be able to iterate a story 3 or 4 times and all of a sudden you don't have something that you could film and something that you could put and something that's going to be at least decent on an indie level. Because you're dealing with indie, and that's the thing. It's all about expression, not big money.
Right.
And so I just love that, because I was like, anytime you're an indie developer, think of it all as an ugly baby. You just have to keep going over it and over it again until it looks a bit more polished. So that's the kind of stuff, you know what I mean? I just think, and that's why Tick, Tick, Boom gets to the heart of that, like the ugly baby moment when you're trying to make something amazing. And it points out a bunch of things about his career, which is interesting, and I'll leave for you to watch, but it's uplifting to anybody on that grind. That's on the creative, I need to make it, I have to do it. Watch that film, it'll make you feel better.
Nice. I like it. The last thing that I kind of got into this week was Res Dogs, finally.
Oh, my boy, thank
so
you.
So good.
Right after Dr. Sleep, too, so you met the cop.
I love the cop.
Ew.
Yeah, so good. I love his spirit guide as well.
Ew, yeah. I'm just going to go over here. I'll catch you next time.
Oh, it's really funny. Really funny and also very poignant, because
That's where they ended up. So if they didn't massacre them like my people, then they were marched from the east coast of America in the south all the way over to Oklahoma, and that's where they stay, and that's where they live, and that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
That's why it's so poignant. And the best part is, guys, you can watch Res Dogs And like, and I'm sorry, I totally hijacked this one from you. You can watch Res Dogs though, and it's humorous enough.
Yeah.
Like, it's telling you exactly what you need to know about the Native Americans. It's
telling you some pretty dark shit.
Ignored,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's giving you kind of like where it is now and how that community has managed to keep itself together. Diving into another reason why I love that so much though is I feel natives at this point, and I am native, just as something I found out more about, you know, over COVID. I told a lot of people about this, but I found out I came from Pequot ancestry and then also from Quechuan ancestry. And what you find out when you're doing the research on this is the only reason you didn't know about it is because you get erased. Like, look at photos of my family. I have long hair now, and I joke with a lot of people about why I have it, but one of the real reasons is that I saw too many pictures of my ancestors getting their hair cut and being put in classes with other Latinos and white people, and they're just blended in. And that's why we don't really know things about the Pequot in my family anymore. I remember my aunt was gonna, but she's unfortunately passed away. But my point is, like, by watching this, we're reclaiming back some of this space. And I think that's what needs to happen. Because I just think, you know, there was a culture there. There was an amazing something that can be comedic, but can also be a lot of other things. And if we don't start sending out messages now saying it was there and it was beautiful, you can be lost forever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%.
So, and sorry, it's not, you know, it's not meant to have everybody on like the, what is it, Native Lives Matter, you know, kind of bandwagon. It's just something I realized that the saddest thing about my heritage on that side, because I have heritage from a lot of different people, but the Native heritage is, it's not like my Black heritage where it was a matter of oppression and slavery. It's more erasure and integration. And you know, some people would say that's great and that, oh, but now the Natives are part of the white people. And it's like, no, but...
Okay, there's a podcast that I need you to listen to.
He needs me to listen to.
Because I think we could turn it into a film.
It'd be gangster. Okay.
Like, I mean, all right, I don't know.
We're walking. We can have the Tusk conversation. That's how that happens.
Yeah, exactly. A Tusk. It's just...
Mixed feelings about that movie.
Yeah, I know. Me too. And I'm a Kevin Smith fanboy, so...
Yeah, yeah.
It's a story of a school that was set up to take Native kids.
This story is I'm saying it from the American perspective. From a Canadian perspective, this is exactly what they did. They're playing out lawsuits now to having these big Catholic houses that literally just
the First Nations and
sadly enough, this is how I got into a religious argument with my sister last night, because she was like going, because she's very Christian, which is okay, but then she was trying to be like, and God doesn't talk to you anymore, Jason, and I was like, who do you think your ancestors worshipped? You know what I mean? Like, stop talking to me about God, okay? Like, our ancestors worship about 7 different things, and that's just one group of them, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sorry that I'm not Christian anymore, but that's not because I don't appreciate Christians or appreciate that, what that religion is. It's just more, I've been around the world too many times, you know? So, anywho, it's Res Dogs is just that little, and I love that Taika was behind it, because I do feel like he understands, because he's Maori, right? Like, he's...
And it's an all-native cast, like, I think... the production team.
I told you, he got a jab, and that is now the second time I have punched him in the arm right in the jab. Like, I wouldn't let anyone touch me when I had my jab, because my arm hurts so bad, and I just punched him twice. Sorry, give me the nuts right now.
That's okay.
I'll take it. Rochambeau. Rochambeau! We're going to be... It was the hunting one. I want her to be in our feature. Like, she's awesome. Like, she's so badass.
The hunting one.
Yeah, not the main character girl. The
oh, yes. She's fucking amazing.
She's awesome, right? Yeah. Like, and I'm like, I'm casting her. I'm going to find her. I'm going to show her my awesome script.
And that's one thing that I was kind of blown away by was, this shit doesn't work if those 4 kids aren't 5 kids.
Well, there's 5, but there's a reason you don't ever see the 5th one.
Fucking amazing.
Yeah, really good actors, right?
Holy shit. Cheese is my favorite. But all of them.
Cheese would be your favorite. I never understand that, because, you know, I'm not an alpha, but I'm not a beta either. And Ed is totally a beta. You love being the dude in the room.
It's okay.
It's okay. I don't mind. It's awesome. It's just, you know.
The world needs betas.
We do. Otherwise, we'd all fucking, well. I'm not like I'm an alpha. Did they have like a C or a D? You know what I mean? Like chaos, disruptor, jackass. J for jackass. There we go. So, all right, Res Dogs though. How far are you in now?
I just finished the second episode, okay. I think. No, the meat pie episode.
Okay.
Which is, I think, the third one.
There's so much great things about healthcare in that episode.
Yeah, yeah.
You want some more meat pies?
I love the rappers as well.
There's two that, like, they're midgets, right? Not like midgets, they're little people.
They're little people, yeah. Yes, I think so.
It. It's like, we're so getting
we're getting cancelled.
Like, no, there's no FCC. Can't cancel me. But I meant that with all respect.
But one of my favorite hip-hop artists is this guy called Superman. I think I've shared.
Oh my god, yeah. I fell in love with him because of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Another guy we're going to have in my movie.
Oh, I would love him to score something.
Yeah, man. He's amazing. He's amazing.
Yeah, but Res Dogs. Brilliant. I'm so happy you told me to watch it.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Cool. What else did I watch this week? Only other thing I watched this week that I think I'd bring up would be Lovecraft Country.
Yeah.
Only because we were talking last week that we had three episodes we loved and then the two we didn't love. Now, this time around, I still love the Korean episode. That was never going to change.
Yeah.
The Hippolyta episode is still quite amazing. A bit weird. Like, yeah. It's still jarring because it's like...
I think that's why it was so good, though, because it comes out of fucking left field.
It's an homage. Like, it's definitely homaging those Lovecraft stories. And that's the only thing that was the biggest homage that I saw, because it was like, clearly, they hadn't had enough of a science fiction slant that they were like, we'll just make one episode that's total science fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was awesome. I mean, you meet the prescient being which has the afro the size of a planet, and you're just like, oh my god, this is awesome.
So cool.
And the message is really cool because it talks about how, and this isn't just Hippolyta, I think that's the thing I understood about the message the second time around, is I think it's trying to talk about her, but it's also, if you took it on as an allegory, it could apply to everyone. Like, how people will back themselves into a corner of limited possibilities. They don't believe they're capable of doing other things.
Yeah.
So, love that. Then the following episode is the one with the jigaboos, and that's always creepy, but it didn't freak me out. It did freak me out. But the episode itself...
honestly, you just said that and, like, I shuddered.
Oh my god.
I'd forgotten about
that. No, those scenes... I guess what I would say is I forget this. It's only a very limited part of that episode, which I actually, like, when I was thinking about it, I was like, I could have done with more of them, actually, because it was so... I mean, that whole, like, and then they do a song, and then that's the only thing you hear in the background is... And you know they're coming, but you can't see them yet. And then you hear it again, and then you hear it, and I can't remember what he keeps singing. There's an old-timey song that keeps coming up, and then you see them. And it's like, oh, that's great. That's such a great build. But the rest of the episode is kind of taking care of a bunch of other things. And then you have the last two episodes, which originally we were like, stupid, hated. I quite like them this time around because I understood the mythology a bit better, understood kind of what was going on, understood Atticus's sacrifice, that was a big deal. The last episode still is very rushed. Like, there's still, it's clear they could have done two more and had a bunch more to talk about, and they never got there. They must have just been waiting for season two. And then, as we all know, and that was, to talk dirty on the podcast like I like to, there's controversy over that. Because originally, there was a paper that floated around on the internet, and it was like this piece of paper that was talking about the United States of blah, 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 Lovecraft Country 2, and it was like there was a whole section for natives that was like the undeveloped part of America. Then there was like a confederacy where like it just was bad, and then there was the free states. And like it looked amazing. And then literally a week after that, they're like, but we're canceling the show. And everybody thought it was because it was a black white thing, and they're like, oh, we can't. They didn't want to delve back into it. Well, lo and behold, a couple weeks ago, and I can't remember if it was Variety or a rag, so if it was Variety, then you can probably believe it was a rag, then obviously that's why I'm calling it a rag. Like, they talked about Misha Green, and they said, actually, the reason this wasn't made was Misha Green. And they said she was really horrible to people on set, and they couldn't get enough people to come back. Like, some people just said they wouldn't work with her again.
Wow.
I don't know. Like, I don't know, but that's a word of warning to you if it's true, because... one of the best IPs out there. I mean, if not the best in the past couple of years. Definitely my wheelhouse. Like, Jordan Peele, if you ever get a copy of this or Lovecraft Country, ever hear me talk about your name, I would work so much and work so hard for you, sir. But no, it's just, creatively, I can see where the stories come from. And I think they're really good. But yeah, you tank it if you're a dickhead on set. We know people like that. Like, not dickheads. We know people that won't work with other people because they've been dickheads on set. So it's just, it really disappointed me to hear that, because it's like, oh, come on. Like, listen, there's a lot of ego that comes with doing all of this. But I think sometimes I benefit because I have another job where everybody has an ego as well. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not unique in the film industry for thinking you're important, okay? There are lots of industries out there with people who think they're very important. The whole point is people tend to like to work with the ones who don't act that way and tend to be nicer people. Mm-hmm. Everybody doesn't have to be that way. And if you're an artistic genius and know how to get your stuff and you're making million-dollar movies, then, you know, what do I know? I'm just telling you from my experience. Getting groups together and working with them, you work a lot better with people that you like than people you don't.
One of my goals always as a filmmaker was I want to end a film with people saying that they would want to work with me again.
That's right. That's right. That's you know what? You simplify things so well. That's exactly it. You just always want to be on set as if this was going to be your last one, and you'd want every single person on that set to come back in. And I can tell you as producer Jason why that is. It's because you're going to need that. Mm. If you're working indie, your crews are going to be small and you're going to need them to come back on more than one occasion. And sometimes they're going to have to do you favors as well. Nobody does favors for people they don't like.
True.
You know what I mean? So just putting it out there. I was so disappointed to hear about that. But, you know, it just leaves it open for more ideas to come out there. So
I guess. Get it was out there. Just such an original idea as well, though.
You say that, but it was based on a book.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah,
it was adapted from a book. So that's the other thing I completely forgot. I mean, Watchmen I love, but Watchmen is adapted.
Yeah.
This is adapted. I'm like, maybe I'm just going about this wrong. Maybe I need to find a good book that speaks my language. You know what I mean? So that was the other thing I watched this week. The thing that I can remember, I think that the last thing I remember watching this week, because I went back to, sorry, we'll talk about the other thing I watched as we're talking about Don't Look Up, because we'll talk about Adam McKay.
Yeah, of course.
And I'll talk a little bit about how I feel about his other films.
Yeah.
So let's launch into that.
All right.
So, Ed, why, you know, starting with some high-level stuff, why was this film so powerful to you? Why do you think everybody needs to watch it? Why do you think, you know, why we go back to, everybody needs to sit down and have this one to watch? What is it about this film that's so, now you can spoil the hell out of it if you need to.
I think it does such a great job of pointing out the ridiculousness of life in the past, like, 4 or 5 years, maybe even before that. But just, you know, we've been talking about like the dumpster fire that was this year and that year and then the pandemic and this and that. And this one just kind of says, look, this is how we act when shit like this that should be important is not taken seriously. And, you know, there's basic premise is that they, Leonardo DiCaprio plays a professor, and one of his students, played by Jennifer Lawrence, discovers a comet, and she starts tracking it, and there's a fantastic scene with, like, him and his students, and they're doing, like, a kind of, you know, intellectual exercise, basically tracking where they think it's going to go.
No, they're just doing the science. So in other words, they're taking a trajectory and a velocity, and they're saying, well, where is this going to end up? Mm. That's exactly how astrophysicists do it.
Right.
And Leo DiCaprio, just so you guys know, I'd say he's like me, but he's probably better than me because he's got more money and more time. Like, he's a closet astrophysicist. He knows the science really well. He's very good with science.
But I think, like The Big Short, this film takes a complex and sometimes difficult to understand concept, and it portrays it in a very entertaining way. And I think that that is a level of genius that you don't often see. I think, you know, like I say, we talked about Bowling for Columbine and how that influenced me, certainly. And I think this one, I hope, might also inspire other people, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like I said, I'll have a lot to say about The Big Short, but I'll start it out small with the interesting thing about Adam, because those are both Adam McKay films. Yeah. Again, we're going back to him. He's famous for a lot of his early comedies that you have seen.
His first film was Anchorman.
Yeah, so I mean, you know what I mean? Like, this guy's a comedy legend to some of us. Me, because I love, that's one of my favorite movies.
And he came out of, like, SNL, where he was doing short films there and stuff like that.
Exactly. Like, so, I mean, he's got pedigree, and that's the thing. But I think the good thing I like about it is, despite the pedigree, because I don't always like the pedigree, I think sometimes that puts them in a certain bucket.
Yeah, and some of his films are can be hit or miss. Sometimes they're fucking amazing.
I completely forgot he did Vice. It's the only one I haven't seen.
Haven't seen that either. I was going to ask.
Really good, and I haven't seen it yet.
But he did Talladega Nights. Oh, which was a miss for me.
Oh my god, no, I love that
film. Did you love that film?
I'm from Cincinnati, I'm NASCAR, mate. Yeah. Like, Jesus, that film was so
amazing. He did Step Brothers, which I loved.
I never saw that film, so I heard it was really good. I heard it was wacky, obviously. Yeah,
it's very, very wacky. John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly and...
And Will Ferrell, yeah. He did The Other Guys, which I was like, meh.
I have that. I don't know if I've ever watched it. It's still in the shrink wrap, you know what I mean? Yeah. But these are the type of comedies that I generally, you know, sit and watch with the wife, you know what I mean? And really enjoy them.
Yeah. And then Anchorman 2, and then Get Hard, The Big Short, Vice, and Don't Look Up is his...
Right, so he starts, because The Big Short's his first... He got to a point where he said he wanted to stop making comedies, like he made, the wacky comedies, the ones with no basis, and he wanted to start making things that had an impact.
Mm.
And so his first one's The Big Short, and... I mean, it's interesting to compare The Big Short. I said, we have to leave Vice out because neither Ed or I have seen it. And I hadn't realized while I was driving here that it was one of his films.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to look at The Big Short in a certain way as well. It's a movie, first off.
Mm.
And there's a reason I'm talking like this, so I'll explain it as we go along. But it's a movie, but it's being told about the past.
Mm-hmm.
Something that already happened, already affected everybody.
Right.
Credit crunch was horrible for lots of people.
Yeah.
But then we're talking about what Don't Look Up is something prescient for the future. And... I don't know. I mean, you did know this because you listened to the roundtable, but I had known this while watching this, but he wrote this before the pandemic.
Mm.
And so his comments in this roundtable were so poignant to be like, when I saw my own beats being repeated in the pandemic, and that's scary. That's the kind of thing that I know exactly what he means as a writer, because you would never want to predict that, but that's part of what your writing is supposed to do.
Right.
And so he got it spot on. Yeah. You know, it was like, oh... And then, Ed sent me something today I thought was very useful. There was also a 14-minute discussion with Professor Brian Cox, who's one of my... everyone calls him my UK man crush, because I would love to sit in a room with this guy and talk for days, because he is the quintessential... You know, to me, he's the David Attenborough of physics. He explains physics and astrophysics in a way that other people can understand what he is. Incredible.
Carl Sagan, right?
A little bit. Carl Sagan was never in D-Ream, though. So, you know what I mean? That's why I like this guy, because he has this ability to not just be a scientist. You know, it's not... And I've said this to Ed before, but it's hard to explain to people. I don't just like Brian Cox because of the science he talks about. I like his worldview.
Mm.
He is a person that believes that we are one of the most unique things in the universe because we have sentient thought. And we just don't... Scientifically, we've never seen it anywhere else. Mm. The world is, in terms of life, the universe is a very dead place. And
he blows my mind almost every time I see him. In that 14-minute thing where he's like, you know, we think of limited resources on our planet.
Right, which is bollocks. You know what I mean? Yeah. The minute you could get off this planet, you're literally surrounded by all these things that people kill each other for on here. And that is interesting, the irony of that. And that's what I mean why I said me and him in a room discussing things would have fun, because he recognizes the irony of people killing each other over gold when it's literally in the billions. How, you know, build a spaceship and go get some gold. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's that easy. Yeah. And so...
In the 14-minute, it's just so good.
It's just an explaining that, you know, the science behind...
But in the movie, they reflect that as well, right? Because, you know, again, spoilers, guys.
No, we're at the spoilers, so you can say it.
But they've got a mission together, they're going to go, and then suddenly they cancel it because... They've realized that there's a lot of value up there and they don't want to just get rid of it.
In the movie that happens, I think that was his only rubbing point, though.
Mm.
Because if you listen to it, he's like, and it's interesting because he will get me to sway. I don't know if he'll sway everybody else about Elon Musk and things like that. But what he points out, he's like, you demonize these people.
Yeah.
However, because that's what it's doing in the film. Don't Look Up demonizes guys like Elon Musk. He's just the most prevalent.
Mark Rylance playing the CEO of Bash.
He's playing the Silicon Valley guys we've come used to seeing every once in a while in the news, whether it's the head of Twitter, Mark Zuckerberg used to be, public enemy number one. And now, thank God, people are laying off him. I think what Brian Cox points out is don't shoot people that are trying to do something to make spaceflight affordable and try to make it normal. It's the thing we should be doing.
Yeah.
And just the fact that billionaires are doing it, not normal people, well, you know, don't have them stop doing it, then nobody's doing it.
There was a... Sorry, because I just watched it. There's a Jon Stewart... you know, the problem with Jon Stewart.
You watched it.
There's one on the economy.
Yes.
And they do a sketch where, like, all these billionaires launch, like, dick-shaped...
Yeah, you know, I saw... Yes, I've seen them all, yeah. I thought that was so funny. I go back to, because I just watched it, because I love the speech. It's the second episode of Lovecraft Country, and it's titled from this speech. It's called Whitey on the Moon.
Yes, yeah.
And that's the only retort I always have to that, don't hurt the billionaires. I'm like, I think we can do it all. Yeah. Like, right. It's the things we don't... This is why you have to watch this movie, because it's all about... We are all hypocrites.
Yeah.
So Brian Cox is saying, it's not limited resources, but don't shit on the billionaires. Yeah, well, that's the whole point. Like, if it's not limited resources, then everybody should be benefiting, and we should be able to get space rockets in space. Like, this shouldn't be an issue. It's more
complex. And that's one of the things that I really appreciated about this film that I don't think I got, like, when I originally watched it, but that you get from The Big Short... And I think you hit the nail exactly on the head. And one is looking back, and one is trying to look forward.
And that's why they're both, in some ways, and to some people, like I said, Ed, I'm not. I personally like the film, but they're failures in both ways for both reasons. Mm. The Big Short is a failure in that it's too complex for most people to understand, and I can say that. Okay, so I'm looking over the parapet as if people are staring at me. Like, my early days as a lawyer were spent figuring out the credit crunch and who was responsible.
Dealing with the fallout. Yeah.
Yes, that was what I did. Like, I literally, you know, I know more about it, unfortunately, than most people, because I spent entire summers in rooms reading documents trying to figure out who was responsible for all of this. The things he gets right, nobody went to jail. Nobody was really punished for any of that. You know what I mean? Like, not punished the way I think people wanted them to be.
Yeah.
That being said, like... He tries to bring up the fact that this is all coming back again, but he does it, you know, in a very complicated way. I mean, do you honestly understand a credit derivative, you know, a CDS or a credit a CDO or a waterfall?
No.
See, this is, and he tries to get into it. And I was always like, leave that for the actuaries. Yeah, you know what I mean?
But I did appreciate the attempt. Do you know what I mean? The sometimes I need to be spoken down to. Sometimes someone needs to, like, boil things down. Do you know what I mean?
The Margot Robbie scene and then the gambling. The gambling scene's probably the best one to explain to you what went wrong.
Yeah.
Because it happens in a lot of different businesses. And as I said, I work in insurance, and I'm not commenting anything about my job there because I'm not allowed to. But I do know about insurance. And insurance will tell you about this kind of spiral effect that can happen.
Yeah.
Where one investment invests in another investment, and a lot of times, because so much of this is going around in the world market, it spirals on itself, and you will just end up, you know, it happened in insurance in the 1980s. We had the XL spiral, which is when people didn't know they were insuring the same thing they were already insuring, and so literally, when one tower collapses, it just has a domino effect,
right.
And then people have the reason that's bad. Okay, and this is the part that doesn't get explained well, and this is why I'm like, I could almost do a sequel to this thing if it wouldn't get me fired. You know what I mean? Like, but what people don't understand is that takes away money from companies in a really quick fashion, and the problem is they don't see both sides of it. So it's almost like the other side of the moon that you can't see. So you have this spiral effect, and you've got problems all over the moon, but you can only see one side of it.
Gotcha.
And so when the other problems hit, that's how Lehman Brothers falls. Right. That's how Bear Stearns falls. Right. And he's trying to show you this by saying how much you have. When you have that scene where he's like $15 billion, like, I keep hitting him in the arm. I'm so sorry.
At least it wasn't a bullseye. Go on.
But, you know, like, he's trying to explain to you, like, that's more money. Like, there were trillions invested in all of this. And it just all went nowhere. And he says it at the end, and he points it out at the end, and then he points out again that all these products are coming right back around again. You know, and that's the business world, guys. Like, don't get me started. You know what I mean? Trust me, there have been plenty of people in rooms in the business world that have heard me go off about that. Which is why I love Steve Carell's character in that, by the way. That is me. Yeah. Like, that is totally me.
The cast. And
the dickhead who's not afraid to be like, you're all wrong.
We'll talk about Don't Look Up, the cast, because that's also pretty impressive.
But
the cast in The Big Short was pretty amazing.
It was. But the fallacy, again, is the fact that they're taking something really complicated and quite mathematical trying to break it down into normal speaking. Right. It's like, this is how these things happen and happen again. It's because you wouldn't really understand it unless you had a degree in applied mathematics. And that's why those guys get paid what they do.
Absolutely. But I like the attempt. Film is a mass media. It's something that it's the media of our time, I think. You know, video games are probably taking over. But and I think that getting an idea across to people in a film is kind of it's the highest achievement that I think a filmmaker can aim for, you know?
Yeah.
And I've got to say, man, and I know of Adam McKay. I've watched a lot of his films, but with these two films, The Big Short and Don't Look Up, I feel like he's done what I think a lot of filmmakers can only dream of doing.
And I think that's right. And I think, you know, that's where I need to step off my high horse a little bit, because it's like, we talk about film being a message, and that's the whole reason I'm desperate about it, because I have so many things I want to tell the world and get it out through film. And Adam did that both times here. And when you talked to, when you talked about Don't Look Up, like, that's... Even though I didn't quite like anybody else in the room, if I'm honest with you, I'm just being honest. I liked him. Like, I liked his honesty. Mm. I liked how he felt. This is why. This is how Ed knows these things. He knows the women that I, like, fantasize about are all probably the worst choice for me. Because Jennifer Lawrence, I was like, oh, shut up. You know what I mean? Like, she just was like, and I wanted to do this, and I wanted to do that. I'm like, oh, man, like, you could do any of that. You're rich. Like, go do it. Like, stop talking as if this is hypothetical. Like, you have more money than sin, you know? Like, go and do it. Go build yourself a petrol station. Invest in something green. Like, don't sit around. And Meryl Streep, I'm sorry, is the worst offender. Worst offender. They're even talking about it on the damn thing. They're like, didn't you do things for Hummer and Chevron and stuff like that? And she's just sitting there like, oh, well, this was a big wake-up call for me. Like, fuck no, it wasn't a wake-up call for you. It was another payday. Like, stop trying to be the benevolent. She did the same thing with me, too. I'm really glad we finally realized this was a problem. Like, nobody finally realized, shit, Meryl, you've been around the whole time. Sorry, Sophie.
I still love Meryl Streep.
One of my favorite actors in the world, you know, who hopefully will be in my stuff. She loves Meryl.
I still love her.
I'm not a fan, as you can tell.
Fair enough. But it was also interesting in that roundtable for Entertainment Weekly, I think it was.
Was that who it was for?
Yeah. He talks about kind of the origin of it, which was his feeling that the, environmental crisis wasn't being taken seriously, and it was like fourth or fifth.
Right, which Jonah Hill, who's in the room, follows up with a fart joke. Or, I'm sorry, a fart noise. This is my problem. I'm sorry, I'm hijacking one more time. I'm touching your arm while I'm doing it. He's really going to kick me in the balls by the end of this episode, I promise you. But you're sitting around like, we need to save the world. And J-Lo's like, I didn't even know how to answer that. And it was like, I don't know either. Aren't you supposed to be having a serious conversation about the woes of the world right now?
And I think that that was also one of the problems I had with the film when I first watched it. I was like, well, okay, this is some really serious shit. And, like, we're making a joke of it. But again, I think that it's a necessary step for the Meryl Streeps,
I know. And Meryl, I loved you as the president in this. This is why I'm being so sour about it. Like, I thought she made a great... you were saying we need to talk about the actors and Don't Look Up. Like,
yes.
The performances by everyone were amazing.
He's very good at dealing with, like, ensemble casts. I'm excited to watch Vice.
No, now, and he actually made sense. He brought Jonah Hill on because he wanted improv, and that's the character that needs to improv funny stuff.
Yeah.
But apparently that last line was improv by DiCaprio. The Variety made a huge deal about the fact that he adds that last line that we really do have it all, don't we?
Wow.
I mean, that's the part that got me, Ed. We'll jump on the actors in 2 seconds, but the story for me.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
Yeah. Oh. It definitely hit you in the vitals.
Yeah, I think so, because it's like, well, that's what we're doing it all for, right? Like, that's the point, isn't it? Because at the end of the day, there's a lot of things that were a lot of shiny things, a lot of crazy things, but...
Sorry. The prayer to stuff. It's one of my favorite things in the movie. Jonah Hill completely improvised that.
Thanks for stuff.
Hey, world. This is it Jason Orlean? His name's Jason. I'm the president's son. Everyone's been making a lot of prayers to people. That's great, but I want to make a prayer to stuff. Sorry. That last scene is so poignant, though. And I wasn't sure they were going to, like, follow through. A part of me was like, they'll probably cop out somehow. Because it's Hollywood movies. And
this
stuff
is exactly
like that.
Brian Cox, the most poignant thing he says, and I heard this just as I was coming in towards your house, the most poignant thing he said is the problem we have as human beings, and I think this is very true.
He's pointing. He's serious.
I am. No, because I really do believe this, is we watch superhero movies, we watch disaster films, and I'm sorry, this wasn't Brian Cox. This was Adam McKay talking in the Roundtable. He said we watch Towering Inferno, we watch like Armageddon, and we have this ridiculous, and it is ridiculous, people, this ridiculous idea that something, someone, somewhere at the last minute is going to save us. That's why they're comparing him to Strangelove. Because Strangelove, that's the point. Is you kept waiting for this to go somewhere else. It never going anywhere else. Because people are people, you know? And that's what I think is good about this film, is to teach people, like, you have the pandemic as proof, okay? That half the world may not respond, you know, or at least half of America may not respond to something that's killing everyone, you know? But it's also trying to teach you, you can't hate people for that. That's how people are. That's why it's don't look up. It's like, there are literally people who won't look up in the sky because they don't want to see what's happening. But don't hate those people. That's a coping mechanism. You know what I mean? That's how people deal with their lives. And shit, you're going to do that, you got to shit on people with religion, you got to shit on people with science, you got to shit on a lot of different things. Everybody wants to explain the world in their own way. I guess the difference between scientists and a lot of other people is scientists believe that we can do it through the senses and that we're going to use empirical data. I've always argued that people need to understand, especially people who love science, that that's still not necessary from a philosophical point, the be all and end all.
Right. It's not that different from...
No, you know, this could all be a lie, guys. Like, we don't know. You know, look up those scientific studies, and there was a documentary that was done on this about the Matrix. Like, that, you know, scientists are, you know, from a
certain,
we can't really tell whether we're in a simulation or not. You very well could be. Why? Because how would we know? You know what I mean? Like, we can't get to the edges of where we're at, and because of that, sure, it could be a simulation.
But that final scene. Like, essentially, they're all around a table.
This is where you get your guy in, too. I always say his name wrong. Timothy.
Timothy Chalamet.
Timothy Chalamet. Chalamet. I don't know. He's very French.
But, you know, they're around a table, and it's just this, like, literally the world's ending, and they make a point of enjoying that moment with their family and their friends.
Literally that moment, because they're going to die afterwards. Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking and very poignant, and it does bring up the question, like, you know, last day to live, what are you going to do, you know?
I find
it was a beautiful representation.
I get in debate, I got to debate with my sister over this, I get debates with everybody. On meaning of life, whatever, like, listen, why does it have to be complicated? You know what I mean? Have the things in your life that make you happy and give you value.
You're always very big on that.
And just make sure that's what you do. Why? Because no one really knows what's going to happen after.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people will tell you they do, but I've been all over the world, and religion was my thing for a long time, and I haven't heard one definitive answer about anything. And so all I'm saying is, while you're here, I'm not saying go and get yours, go out, get drunk, get crazy. I'm saying make things that are important to you. Do things that you value, because you're not going to get another chance to do that from what we know. So that's all it is. You know what I mean? Like, it's the Brian Cox thing he brought up. He said, be proud of the fact that we are one of the most unique things in the universe. That's meaning. That's meaning right there. And how horrible, he says, and I totally agree with this, how horrible would it be if we were the victims of our own demise? That's why he thinks now is the time that this had to come out, because that's what's happening. And climate change isn't a joke, you know? And a lot of, unfortunately, you know, it's the funniest thing that I still hear lots of things, from COP26 to everything else about, we need to do this and we need to do that, but... it's a bit pandemic-like. It's a bit like...
bury your heads in the sand.
You know, like, well, we'll get around to it. You know, we've got targets for whenever. So, you know, I mean, that's the thing, guys. Like, we just don't know. And the other thing that this movie rightfully points out that disaster films have been avoiding by giving you a hero at the end is, you don't have a choice. Okay, a comet comes to Earth. Like, again, listen to Brian Cox talk about this. This is a PhD astrophysicist from Manchester University. We have probably 6 months Mm-hmm. When we'll detect it, when it's coming in, mm-hmm. before it hits us. Mm-hmm. That is not enough time to do much of anything. Mm-hmm. So you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
And the universe, at least our solar system alone, is full of things that could do that to us at any given moment. So that's just, when you take that and think about the chaos of it all, and then how we are sitting here so warm and snug on our chairs and our tables and blah, 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 like, I don't know, man. That's why Don't Look Up gives me, the story
yeah.
gives me hope. You know, it's like, okay, well, there are still people out there that do appreciate our existence.
Yeah.
And maybe, just maybe, we can rally enough of those to at least make it a good last stand, if not, you know, a change.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Let's move on to something more fun, though. Acting. Who was your favorite performance on this one?
That is hard, because...
That's why I asked the question.
There were a lot of good ones. So, Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence are kind of the leads, would you say? Mm-hmm. I thought they were good. And I think Leo, particularly with that final scene, really kind of did it for me. Mm. I got to be honest with you. I know everyone loves Jennifer Lawrence. I've yet to really see her blow me away in a performance.
And like her. All the performances were good. I said that before. Hers was probably my least favorite one.
Yeah, it just wasn't.
I told you much about it. When we talked on the phone, because of course I watched this, called him and said we're doing the podcast, and I do like half the podcast on the phone with him. And one of the things that I thought was weird, and I'm not saying it's not right, I'm just saying it was weird, was her playing like a college kid. And it's like, but you're not a college kid. You're my age. Yeah. So you're 10 years older than that.
PhD student, right?
Yeah, still like, late 20s, mate. Yeah. Not late 30s. Fair. And that showed when she tried to put on like the hipster clothes. And it's like, that's not going to look like you at all. You know what I mean?
Like the Jonah Hill line. All right, boy with the dragon tattoo.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, that's what I mean. Like,
but I think it was also just kind of how the characters... written a little bit.
Exactly. You know? So she's, you know, according to Adam's first one, he wanted, got her, and then she's in the role. And it's like, you know, she delivers what's in the role. Yeah.
She does a good performance.
And it's supposed to be a character. It's supposed to be an archetype, not an exact person, but a someone like that. And that's proven in the end. See, this is why I like the ending, especially because you have the end of each character at the end. Hers has a very unsatisfying ending. She just sat there pissed off because if you spend your entire life screaming at people about what they're doing wrong with their life and not spending time enjoying your own life, like, it's exactly what fucking happened to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I like that message because it's like, see the other guy?
Yeah.
He may have been a bit of a fuck up and may have, like, you know, done some crazy stuff.
Fair bit of a fuck up.
You know what I mean? Like, definitely screwed things up with his family.
His whole kind of, you know... getting lost in the in fame and, you know, ends up having
a fair... It's interesting too, because it could have been so cliche. Like, that is cliche. That is so cliche, but it didn't feel cliche.
No, it felt right. But yeah, I think also, unfortunately, for a lot of, you know, women, the parts that get written for them can come off as shrill and, like... You know,
I'm not sure. I know what you mean, and maybe that could be part of it. Like the closet misogynist in me might be coming out a little bit. Like, she sounded like such a, you know, like, it was more than that though. It was the unhappiness. They could have put a male character doing the same thing. It almost could have been a male character with a millennial like that, like that just spouts and just spouts. You know, it's a Twitter addict. Yeah. You know, and it's like, I thought it was a really good point at the end. What did that do for her at all? Like, nothing.
But in contrast, like Yule, who's played by Timothy Chalamet.
Chalamet.
I really loved that character. I didn't think I would.
Fucking love. I grew up with guys like that. I told you. Like,
he's kind of a waster.
Like the spendthrift kids. Like, I used to hang out with these punk rockers. They all lived in like a house together. They're all Christian. Like, it was. They'd only bring it up in odd circumstances, but they made the peace with it, right?
Yeah.
And so,
It was.
There's something cool
very,
about it.
It was very touching. You know, I remember particularly there's this one scene where I think it's just after he's told her that he, you know, believes in God and all of that, and the comet appears in the sky, like you can see it with the naked eye, and she calls Dr. Mindy, who's Leo DiCaprio's character, and then when she turns around, Chalamet's praying, and honestly, I got teary.
Did you?
Yeah, like it was because. It would have been easy to mock people. That would have been what I expected from a film that comes from this kind of direction, right? But it doesn't. It kind of like says that there's strength in faith.
No, it's what makes him an attractive character, because when you take a punk rocker who's going to be very loud about their beliefs, and an evangelical Christian, he should be really loud about that too, but he's not. He's subtle.
Yeah.
I think these days people appreciate subtle religion more so than people than everyone thinks. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of people who like to be in the back of that pew, you know, in a church and whatnot, no one paying attention to them, but they're just for the whatever. I've seen it. You know what I mean? And so that's where I think he really comes across as another archetype. This you know, that is a type of person in the world today that holds beliefs but doesn't spout them. It's the antithesis to the J-Law character.
Right. Yeah.
And that's why it works, because at the end, he's satisfied, because he's come to his own answers personally. And so that's another message, because this is an end of the world film, which is the other thing people don't always realize. Like, because it's funny, I think people step away from the fact that this is also like, I'm trying to think of other end of world films that I've seen. On the Beach, that's an old one, but that was like the first one I remember seeing. Oh God, there was this great one from Oz not too long ago. That was the same concept, because the whole thing with On the Beach and this one that I'm talking about from Oz is that, you know, in a nuclear holocaust, the last place to be hit will be Australia, because if we all had mutual whatever, they're just going to have this open area for a little while before it comes over them and kills everybody.
Yeah.
And so it was like the last days, the last remains, or something like that.
Yeah.
These last whatevers. And I remember it was really funny, because I remember watching the film, which is all about this guy deciding whether he's going to commit to helping this girl, this little girl, or whether he's just going to party his life away, because they've only got 2 weeks left before the end of the world. And obviously he does the right thing, and it's all about his journey. And, you know, the last scene, just ruining this movie for you completely, you know, the last scene is him going up to like the woman he's been chasing after all this time, and like they're together right as the cloud hits and blows them away. And I remember this film because I saw it at Fright Fest. I ran outside and I called my father right afterwards. And I was like, Dad, I need to say hi to you. I need to call you. And then the next day, I'm sitting around with all my friends. And this guy was like, there was some douchebag in there that was like weeping up a storm, then ran outside and called his dad straight away after that film. And that's the point. Like, films like that are supposed to make you think what is important to you in your life. And I think Don't Look Up, just in that last scene, encompasses so many different groups. The only thing it doesn't live a satisfactory resolution to me on, and again, this is part of the comedy element of it, but I would have appreciated, and I don't think Adam could have done it, because I don't think he can understand the perspective, but I would have liked to know, you know, instead of all of them going up into a spaceship, getting shot into space, and then getting eaten by... I mean, it is funny.
It's hilarious.
It's hilarious, right?
Like a post-credit sequence.
But really, where do people like that end up? This is what I'm talking about. When climate change does happen, and we're all under, like, 100 feet of water and living above that, because that's hopefully what will happen. You know what I mean? What happens to those people? You know what I mean? And there is history to that.
Elysium.
No, that's what I mean. Like, we really... Like, how do they feel? Like, when they were wrong? Like, does it... And I just... I don't know if he didn't put it in, because that would be a big message to a lot of deniers of a lot of different things, saying that this is how you'll end up. And he kind of does that by sending them all into, you know, the death of... What were they? Birds or something like that.
It was a butterock.
Oh, my God.
I think it's called a butterock.
Eat the shit out of it, right? But that's what I mean. I would have... Again, maybe I'm more like Brian Cox on this, than I'm like, I wouldn't have demonized all those people as much. I would have liked to see, what would the president really have done? You know, what would Jonah Hill's character really have done? Does it matter? And that's the thing. I would love to show like a final scene of him being as stupid as he ever was, because some people are just like that.
So Meryl Streep and Jonah Hill. Meryl Streep plays the president. Jonah Hill plays her son, who is an aide. I mean, it's seems quite clearly a dig.
Are you kidding? Her son's the chief of staff.
Chief of staff.
That's
sorry.
Like, that's, he's, yeah, yeah. He's okay. That's right. So that's the other thing is he's not necessarily playing a Donald Trump Jr. He's playing more of a Jared Kushner.
Right.
He's playing a dual role, because Jared was the one who was let. You know, Jared and Ivanka were on. They somehow got positions in the government, and you're like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And then it was like, the best part was, it was like, yeah, you can, because who's going to stop me? And it was like, oh God, you're right.
You're right.
You're in charge right now. Damn it, this was a big mistake.
Possibly Jonah Hill was my favorite character.
Okay.
I mean, he did a lot of improvising, because Adam McKay comes from SNL and he's worked a lot with, you know, improvisers and stuff. And I think Jonah was probably the guy holding up that tent pole, you know? Everyone else is pretty...
I mean, he's a guy that I really feel like I know his career. Because, I mean, all the way back to, like, Grandma's Boy, before he was even in Superbad.
Was he in Grandma's Boy?
Yeah, he's in Grandma's Boy. Of course he is. He's the one that sucks the boobie all night. Nom, 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 nom. That guy just... I mean, it's just... He's a great character. That's, like, his, one of his
very
first...
funny, yeah.
You know?
Very,
and very so, funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think of Tyler Perry and Cate Blanchett? What did you think of that kind of setup, the whole morning show thing?
I thought it was brilliant.
Did you like that?
Yes.
It's not quite BBC. Like, as I said, it's harder to understand, because in England they don't lie to us so blatantly in the morning news.
Right. But they do have shows kind of like that, kind of light and airy.
Oh, definitely. It's just
sofa.
It's just, that's what I mean. Like, you know, like in America, it's like big. Like everybody will watch. Yeah. It's a bit like your soap operas over here. Everybody's like, have you watched EastEnders? It's like, I don't watch soap operas. Yeah. Whereas here, like the morning show here, I'd be like, I think there's like some geriatrics that are going to listen to that. But, you know, like.
But I really like the dynamic. I think Tyler Perry is such a good actor.
Do you?
Like, genuinely such a good actor, that it's a shame that he's also, like, an amazing businessman and director.
Now, something I picked up from the talk that I didn't recognize in the film, was he playing Colin Powell?
No, I think maybe he played Colin Powell in Vice, which is like a political satire.
Okay. That would make a lot more sense, because Colin Powell was part of the cabinet when Dick Cheney was the chief of staff, and Colin Powell was head of something. They were all in Bush's government.
So that would make
much more sense. I really have to see Vice. I heard it is a really great portrayal of Cheney.
I'll be honest. Cheney. I had never heard of it.
I knew Christian Bale played it. I saw it on the posters when it came to the theaters. I just never got a chance to see it. So
crazy.
But yeah.
Cate Blanchett is glorious. She's beaming. She seems like...
No.
Do you know what I mean?
It's just so, like, timeless. Acts to anything. Like,
yeah. Yeah, she's chameleonic.
Still bringing me back to Crystal Skull, though. Like, how? How did you get that wrong? Yeah. I've not seen anything else she's ever been in that I was like, I don't get it.
That was terrible, yeah. No, I agree. I am the guy to bring up the one film. Yeah. I think she did what she had to do with, you know, I mean, what I'm saying is that there wasn't any particularly, like, incredible moment for her. I think that she was, you know, written.
No, I think the beauty you have is that you're taking a person that you know has incredible depth, and she's playing an incredibly shallow character.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think and that's so funny.
It was watching Cate Blanchett, who was the actor's actor. Yeah, you know what I mean? It was like, you know, her, Ian, and Patrick are just going crazy on stage together, right? Yeah. You know, and here she is playing this complete, like, opposite. This whole I'm in showbiz. This is how I live my life. I've had a really good one, but I don't get mixed up with stuff.
It made me want to pick up on the morning show
again. Oh, definitely. That's part of the kind of the mantra in the morning show. A much darker mantra, but part of what that's all about.
How did you feel about Mark Rylance as the Bash CEO? I know we've kind of talked about it a little bit.
What else has Mark Rylance been in that I would have seen? Because it almost seemed to me like I was comparing him with, like, English characters. He seemed a bit like, he always looks to me like one of my favorite English comedians, and I can't think of his name right now. It was an Alpha Papa. He plays that character in Alpha Papa.
Okay.
Alan
Partridge.
Alan Partridge, that's it. Okay, and he's not Alan Partridge. He's really another person, but I love Alan Partridge. Gotcha, like, it's one of my favorite comedies.
he's amazing.
And it's complete deadpan English humor, but oh my God.
So Mark Rylance is famous, I think he's Irish, for Shakespeare. He's one of these, but he did Bridge of Spies with Tom Hanks.
You've always told me to watch that. Maybe it wasn't that one you told me to watch. That was the one that's really boring, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not great. He was also in the BFG. He played the BFG.
Okay, I never saw that.
Which he voiced.
I love the original cartoon was enough to keep me off the remake. I was like, no! Whiz Pop!
Yeah, but he's definitely a fantastic actor.
And he did well. You don't think he did well in this one?
I felt it was a little too cartoonish.
You don't think he did well in this one? No. How many are we allowed to lose?
I found him very funny, but I felt it was an... I felt... Kind of like what you were saying with Brian Cox and everything, it's an easy target.
That's the thing. I think that's the problem. And again, this happens because writers don't know everybody. I think what Adam McKay should have done, sat down with Elon Musk, because he probably could have gotten an audience with him easily.
100%, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And they should have had a talk about what Adam likes and what Adam doesn't like about Elon. From what Elon sounds like, he might be able to sit through the whole thing. I don't know. Like, might not be.
Well, that's the thing, right?
And if you can't get that, get like, Richard Branson, who will sit through anything. You know what I mean? Like,
but sometimes, you know, the way people are portrayed in the media is... Well, it's very rarely what they're really
like. That was the thing. Like, we didn't know... That was maybe the best part about it is it was demonizing someone who doesn't really exist. There was no entrepreneur that we could put to that and be like, oh, that's that guy.
Mm.
It was just... It felt quite Steve...
Well, no, not Steve Jobs.
No, Steve Jobs is intense. Like, yeah, Steve Jobs, true. Like, you know...
Yeah, you're right. He wasn't really caricaturing anyone, but...
He was caricaturing their philosophy. Yes, exactly. And that's the part. That's the part I can slightly agree with. Okay, because guys like that have so much more money than sense. Yeah, it's like, yes, if you have that many billions of dollars, you can go and make these dreams come true.
Yeah.
For those of us that are on middle class salaries, like, it's just different. That's all. Like, you know what I mean? The thing is, I still think, don't hate on them. You know what I mean? Like, I hate them all the time, but it's like, it isn't their fault. You know what I mean? Like, no one handed them that. We didn't.
Some things are, but, you know, not
everything.
This. Yeah, not everything. Two shout outs that I've got to make.
Uh-oh. These will be people that you barely notice, but are really awesome dad.
Number one, Ron Perlman. As
noticed him the playing guy. The absolute racist, like, and that was so accurate as to be like, where is that astronaut? Yeah. Where can we find him? Because maybe we actually should put him in space.
Oh god, it's like so cringeworthy.
What's and that one brilliant. Where he's like talking about all the different races and they yeah, just like yeah. just stop, just stop yeah. talking, just pay attention to what you're doing.
Because yeah. he's like in the ship, in the spaceship about to launch. And he's just going
But
off
what
on
it's pointing out to people, and what I like about that is, like, that might be the guy you need to save the world. So as much as you're sitting here on your, I hate this guy and I hate that guy, like, trust me, man, you need a favor from anybody sometimes. Yeah. So, it's, you know.
And the other person that I kind of have a pathological dislike for,
ooh.
But she turned me around on this one,
ooh.
Is Ariana Grande.
Oh, why do you have a... You know, my parents were like... My dad was like this. Like, my daughter loves Ariana Grande, and I'm not going to say...
I have nothing against her as a musician, even though that's... It's her music isn't particularly... I'm not her audience. But I saw a video of her once in, like, a donut shop.
Don't talk about her audience. Her audience is 12-year-old girls and their 30-year-old dads. Or their 40-year-old dads, you know? Like.
But I saw a video of her in a donut shop... Like with her boyfriend, and she just starts like licking donuts and like being a prick to this poor person who's just doing their job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And just from that moment, and she's just a kid, right? Like, we've all done stupid shit like that. It just wasn't caught on camera and put on the internet.
I mean,
right?
I mean, mate, like, you know, we were 100% together, and
100%. But just since that, I was like, oh, I don't like her. But this very much turned me around. She's clearly got a good sense of humor about herself. And she improvised the song that she sings where she's like, we're all gonna fucking die. Like, it was really, really funny.
Listen, like I don't think she... I think she's a diva all the way. This is Mariah Carey again, which is fine. Like, I loved Mariah Carey because she was like, yes, I'm a pain in the ass. Like, I make this much money, I'm allowed to be. And I was like, okay. I thought I could buy that. I would never marry that, but you know what I mean? Like, I could buy that. So I think she knows who she is, but the benefit you have something. The same thing happened to Justin Bieber, who is now, you know, a little quieter than he used to be because they grow up. Like, and that's the part where I'm like, you always get the last laugh because it's so much harder for them to grow up than it was for us.
Very
like,
true.
No one saw our shit anywhere. Yeah, you know what exactly. I mean? Like, worst thing I ever did, not the worst thing I ever did, but the worst thing I can remember in Korea is, like, I remember playing penis game on the subway, and, like, that just set Koreans off to no degree to hear, like, two white guys sitting there, or mixed in white guy, you know, sitting there going, penis, you know, as loud as we can across the subway. But that's what I mean, like, and I peed on a guy's car once, and, like, you know.
We've all done really stupid shit. No,
But no one ever had a camera on. I guess it's on the podcast now, so if that guy with the car, if you ever find me, I'm really sorry, like, I was drunk. But that's what I mean. Like, and these people live their whole life, at least from that point onward, in the public spectacle. Like, it is a scary thought sometimes, man. You see so many people go crazy from it all. Mm. So, no, I mean, I have, as a musician, I just think, you know, hyper-talented, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? She knows what she's doing, and she's making good money doing it. So keep working that, you know what I mean? Like, every song that comes out will be a new hit for her. But I agree with you that she's showing more maturity these days than previously. I mean, you know, you have to remember this is she was going to marry Peter Davidson.
Yeah.
But 3 years ago, poor thing. Like, no one explained to her, like, man, you're really young to be getting married, you know? And then it was like, oh God, there's a lot of pressure on this. And so that's all I'm saying. Like, this was a really good way for her to kind of show, I think, I may be a diva, I may be a pop singer, but I'm a human being too.
Yeah,
like,
I have a sense of humor. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
I also really liked Melanie Lynskey as
the mom, the mother wife. Slash wife. Yeah, yeah. More so, her character is more wifeish than it is motherish, but.
But it's just very, like, just great casting. Like, she didn't have a lot of screen time, but you kind of felt for her when, you know, she finds out about her husband's infidelity.
No, I mean, what's interesting... Sorry, you finish.
Oh, and you...
It's the fifth time I've touched it. I'm just going to put it there for you, man.
Yeah. what was I saying? Melanie Lynskey...
she didn't have a lot of screen
time. Yeah, she didn't have a lot of screen time, but she just exudes, like, what she's meant to. Like, just great casting. Really, really good casting.
What else did I see her that you're like, she's in that too?
We were watching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. She was she was
right in the
surrogate.
Oh, man, we watched so many good at Sunny's. That was New Year's Eve. And man, we forgot how great that show is to just watch and watch and watch.
Nightman.
I hadn't seen it yet.
Oh, it's so
the best
good.
Part, I was like playing my guitar and doing that. No, I was uploading the podcast and doing that at the same time. And I was still like, the Nightman. Gotta watch that again.
Yeah,
the
definitely.
Nightman cometh.
Very funny. What about you? Who was your favorite?
Performance-wise, well, let me go back to her performance real quick, because what I thought was really good, I mean, the part where he gets found out and all that, that's cliche, and that's going to be cliche, because if it wasn't cliche, then you'd be really confused as to what was going on. I think the only non-cliche part is that he actually is like, I'm going to stay with the and you're like, ooh, you're throwing caution to the wind with 6 months left of the world.
Yeah.
Like, okay. The next scene we see her, where she's like, I'm sorry. She doesn't say I'm sorry, she says, I miss you.
Yeah.
Like, the pain,
that's the one,
pain in her body when she's doing that.
Yeah.
But the honesty of it's almost real. as if you've been there and you've done that before.
Yeah.
But it was so believable. And in a scene which wouldn't necessarily see, that's the problem with that scene. It's not a problem with that scene at all. But that's how that scene works, is because she delivers it. Like, that is a scene that I'd be petrified about, because it's very, it beggars belief to most people. That, you know, people would get back together like that after all that shit. She'd be like, yeah, I miss you.
Did you get... I found it a little strange. I don't know why. But they had very grown-up sons.
Yeah.
Did was that, like, supposed to be a thing? Did I miss something?
I think you're asking me because I'm the family man. I love it. Yeah, because that just shows the length of their relationship.
Gotcha. Okay, how long they've been together.
So,
yeah, okay,
I mean, this is what dudes do that can suck. I mean, 20 years in a relationship and they leave. And that's what they're trying to say. Like, he has grown sons, you know what I mean? And he was up and going somewhere else. So, you know, her coming back at the end, it had to be really believable. And it was amazing.
It was.
He's rubbing his shoulder now. I'm feeling really bad. I'm like, I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I'm feeling it.
Yeah, he's had his third jab, and we didn't warn him that the third... Just so, in case you're listening and you haven't had your third jab, the third one, we don't know what they're putting in any of these guys. So just, you know, relax. It's like, everybody's getting one. It's a shit lollipop. We've all had shit lollipops, you know? But... like, the third one hits you a bit harder. At least most people. It hit me harder. It hit everyone else harder. The only thing that people are doing that is getting really annoying, and this isn't at my work, but I've heard it at workplaces, is like, this is the one where everyone calls in, and it's like, I'm having after effects. With that voice, it's not really good. So, at any rate, for the sake of Eddie's arm, I think, do we have more we want to say about this one?
I mean, we talked about the acting, we talked about the story... the comedy, I think, is solid here. I mean, it's Adam McKay, right? Like, I don't think he missed a beat.
No, and he paid whatever special effects person needed to be paid enough at Netflix to do it right.
Yeah.
Nothing about the shots was particularly memorable, but in the same sense, nothing was particularly bad.
Yeah, I think perhaps the impressive thing is that this was shot during a pandemic. You know?
Yeah, like, and the timings, like, I shouldn't say all the shots, but they're not bad or just normal. The last scene, I really liked his timing on that one, how he was panning to the actual end where you're literally watching everything getting blown to dust and back to the house and then out and then back to the house. Because that's it, guys. Like, that's how it is. You know, that's the end of the world.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh, Linus Sangren was the cinematographer.
Okay.
He's worked a lot with David O. Russell and Damon Chazelle.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, overall, man, this one grew on me. Like, I liked it when I first saw it, but I had qualms. And then the more I thought about it, watching the Professor Brian Cox thing, and even the round table thing, I was like, okay, like, this is an important film. It's an important film because it is kind of a cry for us to look at ourselves and recognize the ridiculousness of some of the ways that we react to things.
That's right. And that's where I disagree with Variety, because Variety said this was a scream. You know what I mean? And it was too many people screaming about what everybody else already knows. Like, I'm not convinced that everybody does know this. I go back to what Adam said about people still believing in the back of their head that someone is coming to save them. Like, oh man. Like, and we all do it.
And I think it deserves a scream. Like, I think it, you know.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It's gotten to the point where you're like, come on, guys. Like,
No, because the worst thing about the feeling for those people, so for your other 50%, and this is talking about the Leos and the Jay Laws and those people, you know, because the world is pretty divided that way. For those people, the only thing that's not talked about is what, you know, as much as you have to have a world full of everybody, what recourse do they have? You know what I mean? The worst thing that happens is that people like this begin to feel gaslit, and they begin to feel like they're the ones that are wrong, and that these groups of people that are around that are telling them that's clearly what happened in America. You know, this is the thing we're always raging about in America, is this minority rule by people who tell us that it's all wrong and blah, 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 blah. And so this is a collective way for those people and the other side to just see it and just feel it and just understand the frustration of that. And that's exactly what Adam McKay wanted to do. So that's why I have to, like, completely praise the film, because even if I didn't like it, it's exactly, if you listen to this roundtable he did for EW, you know, this is exactly what he wanted to do. And so that, to me, alone is worth the podcast to say, execute your vision like he did. Because, yeah, like, it's a brilliant idea, and it also is executed exactly the way he thought about it. So, you know, that's what gets you J-Law reading it and saying, ooh, I'll pick this up. And Meryl Streep saying, I'd love to play the president.
One thing I did quite like about Jonah Hill during the round table, because he does kind of act a fool, but at one point he's like, well, you know, he asks, what can people do on a very kind of basic level that isn't going to, like, require a massive overhaul of their lives or anything like that? And DiCaprio said, vote for people who recognize that this is a real thing. You know, that the climate crisis is real, that something needs to be done now. And, you know, again, I think that this is the kind of film that might kind of make you think, okay, well, I need to be a bit more socially aware.
I think that's worth stepping back and saying it again, because I think that probably is about right. Now, I hate the Leo crap who said it, because that's 10 people sit there and say, well, Leo said it. But listen, like, it's not complicated either. The simple things that you can do, you out there, if you watch Don't Look Up and are like us and are like, yeah, man, the world is coming a pretty horrible end, and this is exactly how it'll happen, right? If you're really pissed off about all these things, like so many people watching this, then exactly that. Don't keep putting people in power or letting people in power, you know, that you don't agree with on that. You know what I mean? The whole reason America ends up the way it does, guys, is because, you know, look at the midterm elections. Republicans show up in droves to vote, and we're, you know, the other side, which is supposedly this 50% that we're talking about, it's nowhere to be found. And we're like that. And because we go back to our lives, we go back to the daily things, it's different than saying, how can I change my life? You don't have to change anything, really. You just have to put it in the direction you want it to be in. So don't do anything now, but you know what I mean? If that vote comes up and it's, you know, one or the other, make it important. If you need to get out there and campaign for that guy, then do it.
Yeah. And consider it as, like, and that's what I'm going to do. That's definitely one thing that from now on, like, priority one for me is going to be, you know, does this person have an idea of what they want to do for climate change?
And it's no one's fault, but because of all the things we are privileged with in this world, we live in a world where a lot of people, especially, you know, living here in England or in the US and living in nice places, we're not doers anymore. We're thinkers and we're talkers. It's like, you have to be a doer. You know, nothing will get done if nobody does anything. And so that's what I mean. We can talk about these problems and watch movies about these problems to we're blue in the face. And it's fun and it's great, but if real change is going to happen and we're going to avoid disasters, then action has to happen. And that, that requires everybody, not just, you know...
But if a film can help, you know, move that dial even just one notch, I...
Absolutely. That's part of... That's Adam McKay's contribution. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, that's his saying, I need people to be prescient about how horrible they would feel if this really happened.
Yeah.
And it works because he put comedy in it that you're like, okay, yeah, I would feel pretty...
It does, but right at the end, man, like, it hits hard, I think.
Yeah, they're gone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's over. Hard.
Great film. Great film.
All right, y'all. Well, thank you all for listening. As I said, we've had a very good discussion about this. Please also watch The Big Short. You know, it's another one that if you have questions about that, Jesus, I could wax lyrical to you about it. But we aren't going to do another podcast because I just think it'd be too complicated if I got into all the different ins and outs about it. But it's another great Adam McKay film that exemplifies, you know, it should be called Greed and Stupidity. That's what that should be called, because that's what all that is greed and stupidity. And unfortunately, I can tell you people, not from my own job, but from, you know, just being experienced and in the financial district for as long as I have, like, it's never going to go away. You know what I mean? At least not while we have a modern civilization. When civilization ends, then sure. You know what I mean? Like, greed and stupidity will still win out, but it won't be doing it over, you know, credit derivative swaps, you know what I mean? Or credit swaps and derivative obligations. So, you know what I mean? Like, take it with a grain of salt. Take it as much as you want. But please go out there, folks, and enjoy your lives. Live them. Yes, don't listen to this podcast. Get out there. Anyways, I'm not sure what we're watching next week. I still haven't seen The Matrix yet. I have no heat and water, so I didn't want to, like, bum it in the... I'm just always worried that, like, I'm going to be there and people are like, he smells. You know? Like, shut up!
I mean, that's a possibility because it's on at the Stag.
So. Okay, yeah, let's try it. I've got it booked for Thursday. So if I go on Thursday, then we can do Matrix next week. Otherwise, thank you all so much as always for listening. We miss you guys. It's kind of cold, dark, and horrible that we're all, like, locked in now for it's not really lockdown, but we're not really allowed to go anywhere either. So
it's getting,
like,
cold as well.
Yeah, it's just really weird right now. So thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week and hopefully cheer you up a bit more with some more stories about the end of the world. And yeah, bye bye for now.
Have a great start to your 2022.
Against our lands, but soon against ourselves. You haunted every memory with no goodbye sound. Bad for me, your pride put out the fire in our flames. Then just one look is all it takes. I feel.